Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today is Mr. Dominik Schäfer. He is the MD of COG Offshore in Hamburg and also the COO of COG Offshore in the US. First of all, Dominik, welcome to this interview.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation, Bo. Thanks a lot.
Dominik, it has escaped no one that you are from Germany, I believe. And would you please explain a little bit to our viewers, who are you, please, and what got you into shipping in the first place?
Yeah, great. I'll be happy to. So, yeah, as you outlined, so I'm the managing director of COG Offshore GmbH based in Hamburg and the chief operating officer of COG Offshore LLC in the USA. So over there, we have five offices. One is based in Houston, Texas. One is in Galliano in Louisiana. So that's about 30 nautical miles north of the port of Foshan, so at the entrance to the Intracoastal Waterway System in the US. So anybody familiar with oil and gas knows that area pretty well. Two offices in Massachusetts, one in New Bedford and one in Boston. And then we have another office in Baltimore in Maryland. Mm-hmm. So how did I get here? So I do have a very strong maritime background, I'd say. So I grew up in a city in Northern Germany, which is kind of the intersection point between the Elbe River and the Kiel Channel, which connects the North Sea and the Baltic Sea. Mm-hmm. And so as a child, I was always used to see passing ships, you know, in that river, you know, making fast in the locks, you know, hearing their horns, like, you know, whistle blowing. And, you know, there's been a lot of maritime events in my area. So to me, it was always clear that, you know, I was going to end up in that industry some way, in some sort of fashion. And so I did. I started studying nautical science in Elsfleet in Germany, and later on became a ships officer, you know, mm-hmm. in maritime trade, engaged in international voyages. On various vessel types. So I started out on container ships, on tanker vessels, anchor handling tug supply vessels. So it's been a fun time, really. Did that for quite some years, actually. You know, once family gets involved, you start to see things from a quite different perspective and from a different angle. So I stopped going to sea. And so I became a marine surveyor, port captain, / heavy lift engineer, project manager. So I've been involved in many, many heavy lift and super heavy lift operations throughout Northern European ports. And to break that down, there's been hardly any type of cargo or vessel that I didn't get my hands on during that time. And for me, that was also a very good entry point into the offshore wind industry, actually, mm-hmm. where I inspected jackup vessels and screw protection vessels and crew transfer vessels, like on and off hire surveys, safety inspections, etc. So that was really fun. And then 2017, we got the opportunity to move over to the US, you know, and get some experience abroad. So I started working with COG Offshore then. And in my first role, I was the director of marine operations. So mm-hmm. I was responsible for our marine and heavy lift and transshipment operations in 35 American and Canadian ports, you know, where I work with a team of marine surveyors and port captains and HSE field specialists, etc. So that was a great experience, mm-hmm. but that was a lot that we did like on the onshore side, you know, serving the project cargo segment and the onshore wind industry. And, you know, since we're more progressing nowadays towards the offshore wind industry, I took on the role as the chief operating officer. So kind of like paving the way towards that industry in the US, setting up new partnerships with European companies, learning from them, implementing new, you know, methodologies and technologies on the East Coast and, you know, getting things done over there. So, you know, just the prepping from the prepping slide. And fast forward, December 2020, after 4 years in the US, we decided to go back to Europe. We just had to give it a hard cut because if it wasn't for that decision, we would have never made it back home, to be honest. Like working overseas in the USA is a really great experience. Like, and anybody who's watching this, I would encourage you to like do it. If you get the chance, try it out. It's fantastic. But yes, so we had to go back somehow. Okay. So
Dominik, when you say we, you mean you and your wife or partner?
Family,
or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So yeah, my family and I. So yeah, exactly.
Okay. So that means you are now, after some years in the States, back home in good old Hamburg. And right. How does it feel to be back home?
Good, actually. So surrounded again, you know, by lots of family, you know, takes a lot of pressure from you, you know, to be able to, like, you know, just, you know, give your kids away sometimes when you need your, you know, your space. Yeah, it's a really good feeling, but I do miss my colleagues and friends over there, of course, a lot. But, you know, we're, you know, through COVID, we're you know, perfectly well connected, you know, through internet and meetings, Teams meetings, etc.
Okay, tell me about COG Offshore. Who owns it? When did this company start? And is it basically, it's a US company from the beginning, right?
Yes. So it's a US company. So COG Offshore today provides a wide portfolio of integrated logistics services and logistics support services to the on and offshore wind industry, you know, in Europe and in the USA, and also, of course, to the general break bulk and project cargo segment. I think everything started in 2015 and 16. And just to break that down in a couple of minutes, so back then, COG has been a marine operations and technical consultancy firm with a strong focus on the support of large-scale onshore wind energy projects by managing heavy lift and transshipment operations in American ports, which received wind turbine generator components from overseas. So that means from Europe, from Asia, from South America, and looking at about 65,000 erected turbines today in the USA, you can imagine that these shipments, you know, these heavy lift ships and multi-purpose ships loaded with these cargoes are coming from pretty much every direction towards the US. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on the West Coast and the Gulf Coast and, you know, in the Great Lakes area. And so for a small company back then, for COG, it's quite a good work. So we planned and supervised the operation for about 75 to 100 shipments a year.
Just to be clear, your customers, would that be the ship owners direct, or would it be the project forwarders who are involved door to door, or who are you supplying your services to? Anyone who needs your help, or primarily who?
Yeah. So anybody, I'd say anybody, you know, participating in the big picture supply chain, of, you know, project cargoes and, wind turbine generator components. Mm-hmm. So to say, so that can be anybody from the OEM itself, shipping companies, logistics companies, marine agencies, even trucking companies, stevedores, ports, anybody involved. Yeah.
So that means you are neutral to all of them. Whoever comes to you with a business, you will quote them. You don't play any favorites. You are not owned by any forwarder or any. You are, let's say, your own entity, so to speak.
Yeah, we're our own entity. So we're perfectly independent. Okay. But we do, of course, offer our services, you know, to anybody who asks for it. Right now, we work a lot for OEMs, like the biggest manufacturers of wind turbine components, but then also, of course, logistics companies, you know, working in that space, and shipping companies as well.
Right.
And so we just don't provide these kinds of services. So like I mentioned back then, we've been you know, planning and, you know, supervising these types of, you know, ship shore intermodal you know, interface operations. But we knew, I think, from an early stage that we wanted more and that we wanted to expand into a wider variety of services. So we started advising terminals and stevedoring companies on best practices on how to store and marshal, say, wind turbine components, for instance, in their yards. In order to enable a swift and fast turnaround and safe turnaround, of course, in their yards. And then in turn, to allow OEMs to meet their delivery schedules to the construction sites.
Right.
So so we create marshalling plans and lay down plans, you know, for these guys. And I think we have really changed, you know, the way, you know, cargo is laid down in yards and then marshaled for further transportation, you know, in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And this went hand in hand with the deployment of HSE field professionals and, you know, transport specialists in the yards, at factories, at railheads, at construction sites. So that was a good business. And I think what really made a change in our company was in about 2017, when we noticed that the volume of wind turbine generator components to the US increased drastically. Now, suddenly, from working just 100 ships a year, we've been working 150 and then 250. And just last year alone, 2020, we worked about 400 ships loaded with wind turbine generator components in 35 ports, actually. So to sum that up, it's about 45,000 components that, like individual components that we handled and accompanied throughout the supply chain in the US. Right. So
it sounds like you're on the right trajectory, I should say, because with green energy overtaking all of us, and there seems to be no end to investments in that, you certainly are onto the right path. May I just ask for reference, who owns COG Offshore? Who's behind it?
So basically behind that is our CEO, James Klaus. So he's I'd say a heavy lift shipping and project cargo veteran in the US. So he has worked for quite a few of the heavy lift shipping companies, you know, and set up offices for these companies in the US. And then at some point when he realized that there's been a big, you know, market emerging with, you know, serving like the wind industry. So that's when he started his own company and, you know, built this up. Nowadays, the ownership is more or less same. We have brought in several partners to widen our experience and our portfolio. But we're also bringing in a lot of partners now from overseas, from Europe, to deliver services also to the offshore side of things.
And you are besides being the COO in parts of the US, your role in Europe, so to speak, which is, shall we say, the cradle of wind turbine industry, I guess, your role here is that to develop the European market, which seems to be booming as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we're still young over here. So that company was founded just a couple of months ago, but I think we are on a good path to success. Okay. So we're setting up our first operations here. And of course, we want to make an entry into the offshore wind industry over here in Europe. I think just because we do have that track record and the experience and the right personnel to do so. Onshore wind in Germany is, I think everybody knows that. There's not that much going on. at the moment, so this industry is not very blooming, but the offshore wind industry definitely, and the general project cargo industry is.
And I mean, I'm sitting up here in Stockholm, Sweden, and as you know, Scandinavia, you can say some of the world's major producers of wind turbines actually come from here and originated from here. I've just had a trip around several Finnish and Swedish ports, and it's booming with the renewable project cargo everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look, and it's going to continue. You also would be able to advise people up here in the north of Europe. I mean, anywhere in Europe, you could be a consultant for a port who needs to understand how to handle all these volumes, a freight forwarder who might need, who has good solutions, but not for the, let's say, marshalling or handling as such. You could advise them, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of our main focuses is the transport engineering of, you know, project cargo transports. I think, so one of the main segments we entered at some point in 17 is the barging segment.
Yeah.
So we are barging a lot of wind turbine components and general cargoes through the intracoastal waterway system in the US. So, and there's a lot of transport engineering involved for that, for instance. And also when we're, you know, planning and supervising these heavy lift operations in ports and, you know, how we do the marshalling and the laydown. So right now we invested about $50,000 just in software, just to get, like, you know, just to analyze the motions of barges, for instance, like in certain weather criteria. Mm-hmm. And in met ocean conditions, so we can calculate motions and accelerations in pretty much any given point of that, and then, you know, come up with sea fastening solutions, you know, for any company. Or we have a very sophisticated 2D, 3D, you know, CAD software with which we can draw laydown in storage yards, and then, you know, perfectly well plan the sequencing, you know, of the laydown, and then, you know, the process is needed in order, you know, for a perfect marshalling and, you know, pre-assembly of these components.
So you can visualize it for the customer, so they can kind of, seeing is believing, you know, they can see through your 3D, let's say, video or whatever you call it.
Absolutely,
people can see how it would work in practice.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And absolutely. I think it's, and this nowadays is a great value add. to our customers.
Yeah.
No, it's you know, visualization says so much more than just words. I could explain you how to do it in, you know, 2 or 3 hours, and you would be absolutely bored by that.
Yeah.
Or I just show you the perfect visuals on how to do it, and you know, and you get what I mean.
Are you the only one in the Hamburg office, or are you having several more colleagues coming on board?
Right now, I'm the only colleague, or you know, my own boss over here. Yeah. Setting up things, but you know, projecting by the end of the year, we will be looking for personnel over here to assist our operations. So, you know, anybody interested to join our company, you know, Jen, you know, reach out to me.
I'm sure there are a lot of people who might be. Who knows? These days, when companies go together, there'll be leftovers. So, also in the renewable business.
Absolutely.
So. The job that you have, although you sit in Hamburg, you still have some major responsibility in the US. How do you manage that? Then you have colleagues who kind of assist you over there, or is everything, let's say, online for you? How do you manage in COVID times?
That's an excellent question. So I used to travel, you know, back and forth between Europe and the USA, not just only, you know, for management meetings, you know, with my colleagues, you know, on the management level, but also I'm a very, how should I say that? I like to be out there in the field as a port captain, you know, load wind turbine components onto barges and, you know, attend ships and, you know, take care of the heavy lift operations there. So I also attend, you know, in-field operations, you know, train new personnel and, you know, just, you know, show face from time to time. I think that's very important. And that's not possible anymore due to COVID. So if I wanted to travel to the US, I need a national interest exemption certificate, which we do get granted, but we tried. But we got that but it's, we want to keep our traveling, of course, to an absolute minimum. So, but of course, if you look at that many operations that we have in the US, of course, there is some travel activities involved and, you know, we take our safety precautions. Now, In our company, we are about 50 employees.
Right.
So, and that's marine surveyors, port captains, transport specialists, HSE field specialists, marine technologists, agents, agency brokers, customs brokers. I mean, just serving the business over there. So we can really manage to get that
done. I honestly think you're onto, or you have been for a couple of years now, onto something right, because I've heard from my own past in freight forwarding, a lot of people having headaches doing inland in the States. And it turned out being, although everyone speaks good English, but once you see the bill, it's certainly another language than English. It's huge. A lot of people burnt their fingers doing inland transport in the States. So you certainly seem to have the competence in that, right?
Thanks for that. Yeah, absolutely right. We do. So, I think an interesting thing is that when in 2017 we realized that there was like such a sheer amount of, you know, components coming into the US, the transport equipment infrastructure in the US was kind of overloaded.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that amount in correlation with their ever increasing sizes, for instance, blades, you know, back then we've been looking at 54 meter blades. Now we're looking at 81 meter blades just on the onshore side.
Yeah.
It was so much cargo coming in that at times there was just not enough transport equipment available to get the transport done. And if it was available, it was extremely expensive because you as an OEM or as a developer, you wanted to get your hands on that equipment to get it transported to the site, right? Now, the US is an extremely huge country. So it's not like European countries where just, you know, within a 700 miles you get like from one end to the other, but we're talking about thousands of miles here. So, and anybody who's familiar with the way tax incentives work in the US, so production tax credits and investment tax credits, you know that by the end of a tax incentive legislation, these companies are trying to get as many components into the US, for instance, as they possibly can. So this is why we saw that increase. But so the development rate of conventional modes of transportation, like trucking or rail, was completely outpaced. So the good thing for us is we saw that coming. We, you know, and there was, at that time, there was one mode of transportation that had been completely underutilized in the US, and this is barging, actually.
Right, right. So of course, today, you have major rivers there, of course.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We found a perfectly well niche market there. So if I think about that, you know, today it's like nobody even considered, you know, barging back then. But so we started offering OEMs, so the manufacturers of these components, turnkey logistics solutions, fully engineered, as close to their construction site as we could possibly deliver them. So that means we would take over their components at the first port of discharge in the US, load them to barges. In a perfect world scenario, we would take them directly from the ship to the barge and then ship them up, you know, through the intercoastal waterway system, or, you know, through the inland waterway system, or offshore, say, from Mexico to the US, on barges, where we would provide, you know, the full engineering, the equipment, the barges, the tugs, the stevedoring, you know, the craneage, everything we needed for that. And just to give you one example, the navigable inland waterway system in the US has a total length of about 25,000 miles.
Okay.
So just to put that in perspective, that's exactly one time around the equator, which is 24,900 miles. So just to give you a picture, like how big that truly is. I don't want to say it gets you anywhere, everywhere in the US, but it gets you pretty close, you know, to some construction sites. So, and you would just then have to do the last mile transportation from there. So we would go in, look for suitable discharge ports, you know, get the transshipment done, you know, to the site. We would come in, prep that port correctly, bring in stevedores, craneage, everything needed to get that done. Right. So, and what that did is, over the years, this became really a safe and reliable and absolutely price competitive mode of transportation. And not only would it ease the existing bottleneck, you know, situation in the US where just not enough equipment was available, but it was also, it turned out to be an absolutely emission cutting mode of transportation compared to trucking, for instance.
Now, which also is a buzzword nowadays.
it is an absolute buzzword. So normally you would, like, if you think about, you know, taking off, you know, project cargoes, for instance, like off the roads and put them onto the water, like in Germany, for instance, like by 2050, 80% of all the, you know, road transport should be taken or must be taken from road to barging, actually, through our inland waterway system in Germany, you know, just to reduce, like, emissions and, you know, keep our roads, you know, intact. And we see the same thing more and more happening, you know, in the US, like companies are looking for emission cutting solutions. Okay. And barging is perfect for that.
It's ideal. One question I have for you, there are several breakbulk ports in the US. Which one would you, without fear or favor, call a more efficient in way of handling project cargo? I mean, the most well-known, of course, is Houston, maybe, but there are quite a few others. If you should rank some of these ports in let's say, ways of flexibility, understanding, easier to deal with from a project cargo perspective, which ports would you recommend any shipper to use?
I think Houston has been, you know, for many years, and it still is, you know, the one go-to point.
Yeah.
You know, for you know, wind turbine generators, for instance, but also for a lot of project cargo. It's perfectly connected to the hinterland system. You know, it has a perfectly developed rail infrastructure, for instance.
Right.
It has good connections to highways. So from Houston, you get really everywhere.
Yeah.
I think other ports which are like really becoming bigger and bigger in that respect is New Orleans.
New Orleans, okay.
Or New Orleans, just because it's right, it's perfectly positioned at the Intracoastal Waterway System, you know, and at the Mississippi River. So that's perfectly well situated too. And then, of course, in between, we have cities like Beaumont, for instance, which is also located in Texas. Beaumont, you know, has a very huge you know, turnaround of you know, wind cargoes. And and then some ports west coast, like San Diego, for instance, you know, that does a lot. And yeah, so these are the main ports. Washington, if we look at Longview and Vancouver in Washington, so
in the northwest,
in the northwest, so these guys also take a lot of cargo there. So going up further north, like on the northwest doesn't make too much sense, even though I lived in Seattle for mm-hmm. 4 years. And Seattle has like the sixth biggest port in the US.
Okay.
I haven't seen this port from the inside only once.
Right.
I haven't seen it once because it's no project cargo going there. You know,
so you were kind of sleepless in Seattle.
I was kind of sleepless in Seattle, but it's, oh man, I've been traveling a lot. Believe me, I was sleepless. It's so.
If we take the East Coast, just to round it all off, the East Coast, where would you recommend, or let's say, which one would you say are more competent in way of ports?
That's a perfect question. We will find out. Let's put it like this. The East Coast has, and I'm sorry to say that, but the East Coast has never been that attractive, really, for wind turbine components, for instance. Like everything that came to the US came mostly through the West Coast or the Gulf area. But we also see a lot of cargo coming through the St. Lawrence River, you know, into the Great Lakes.
And then, of course,
like for any projects that you have like in the far north,
right,
the northwest, you would come in through the Great Lakes often. But on the East Coast, there wasn't too much going on. I think this also has to do on one side with, there are project terminals, of course, like that can handle project cargoes. And they're also like kind of like well-developed. But I think the geography in the Northeast, like just was not, I think, perfectly well-suited for too many, you know, wind projects. So like there's a so-called wind belt in the US that goes from north to south, which has like perfect wind conditions. And it's perfectly centered in the US.
Okay.
So this is where you see most projects, you know, starting in Texas and then going all the way up and also in the Northwest. So I think
it's not what you call the Bible Belt. No, that's not the same. No,
but it's like really that we call that the wind belt, actually.
The wind belt, yeah.
The wind belt. And and I think this is why there hasn't been so much going on the East Coast.
Right.
But really, this is about to change, you know, once the offshore wind industry sets in, you know, on the East Coast. And it's kind of, you know, funny because I'm all the time I'm talking about, us transitioning into the offshore wind industry, but there isn't much happening yet. You know, like for somebody, you know, watching at it, like from a wide angle, from some distance, you would think there's nothing going on the East Coast really right now. So, you know, everybody talks about Europe. We have, I think now we have like 5,400 offshore wind turbines installed in our waters. And I think more than 120 projects now. So it's really crazy. And we're getting close to, I think, like 27 gigawatts, like power output, which is a lot. Now, if we look back to the US, we have 7 turbines installed with 42 megawatts. So it's like nothing. You would say this is like really sleepless on the East Coast now.
But it's coming, it seems. I mean, with Biden on board and Biden being greener than Trump, maybe something's happening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like Biden really opened the floodgates to offshore wind, you know, on the East Coast. So so my family and I, we spent the Trump administration, like that period in the US. So like when we came over, he was inaugurated. When we left, he was like, you know, he had to leave the office again. But during that period, it was funny because everybody was just waiting to make these big investments into offshore wind.
Yeah.
But since Trump was, you know, like I'd say opposing this industry, I wouldn't say really, really opposing, but there had been, you know, some barriers to entry for some companies, you know, to make their investments. And now, you know, so since the Democrats are back, you know, in the seat, in the driver's seat, it really opened the floodgates. And now, you know, all these investments are coming. We see first projects being approved. It's 21 projects on the horizon, which I think 17 are.
Which port would you guesstimate or would you predict will become important on the East Coast in your view, because it is coming sooner or later, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which one or two ports would you say are in the, let's say, foreground?
So there are huge investments made into the infrastructure. So the funny thing is there is no suitable infrastructure at this moment.
Okay.
You know, to handle, you know, all these super big components. Like I mentioned, we're looking at 81 meters on the onshore side. On the offshore side, if you look at, you know, Haliade X turbines or, you know, the Siemens Gamesa, you know, 222 SD blades with like 108 meters, and then, you know, Vestas with 115. It's very, very hard to handle these.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
Ports. So these ports have to be built. I mean, that's right. A fact. There are ports like in New Bedford, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, the New Bedford Marine Commerce Terminal.
Oh, yeah.
So which will be the staging port for the first large-scale offshore wind project in the U.S. Okay. For Vineyard Wind.
Okay.
So, and, you know, this is confirmed. But there will be more ports built in New Jersey. There are large areas, like large ports in Virginia, which will be used for the Virginia Coastal Offshore Wind Farm.
Okay.
Portsmouth will be very important.
Okay.
And yeah, so and just to sum that up quickly, it's like the infrastructure has yet to be built in the US. Yeah.
No, but I think it's very informative for our viewers, because I mean, New Bedford, when I hear the name Bedford, I think of a truck or a car or something like that. I didn't think of a port, right? And Portsmouth, you think of the UK. So I think you have shed some light on some new ports on the East Coast that few, if any, have heard about, I guess. But listen, Dominic, it seems to me, and I think my viewers will agree, that you are onto something really right, and have been for a couple of years now with the wind turbine. As far as just where I'm sitting can see, it's exploding everywhere. And now some complaints about land-based turbines. Now they want them to go offshore so people don't have to look at them all the time. You are in the right time at the right place. What's in the future for you as COG Offshore? Continue to expand or make yourself better where you are? What's in the cards for you in the next couple of years?
Both, actually. So we want to expand, you know, as fast as we can, and of course in as many segments as we can, and of course we are always looking for you know, bright minds, you know, good people to join our company and to make that happen. We're also, like I mentioned, looking for partnerships with European companies, like anybody who's interested to, like, you know, participate in the offshore wind industry with good ideas, you know, like existing companies here that want to partner, you know, always, you know, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we'll see what we can get done. With entering the offshore wind market, we're adding, of course, a whole lot of new services to our portfolio. So now we are, you know, looking from the marine operations side of things. We are partnering with a company called Crosby Tugs to get our hands on around 400 barges and 130 tugboats.
Okay.
To also increase our capabilities to deliver offshore components to construction sites, and also like to increase our capabilities for intercoastal waterway and inland waterway transportations. So one thing that we have developed is the adapt feeder barge concept.
Mm-hmm.
So due to the Jones Act, and you know, I don't want to like dive too deep into that, but the way that the offshore wind farms are constructed, and the way that logistics works in the US is a whole different thing than from Europe.
Yeah.
So here we have the Jones Act, which would prevent any foreign flag ship to come to the US, pick up components in a port, and then just go offshore and start installation. It just doesn't work the way here. So, so any component that's being constructed in the US will have to be feedered from the port to the construction site, at least for the first projects, since there are no American flagged installation vessels.
Right.
And at the moment, so one is being built right now, but that will take a while when it comes.
Okay.
So all these components will have to be feeded to the construction site on barges in a tug barge combination alongside foreign flagged installation ships.
Oh,
will never be allowed to enter the port, but as long as they stay outside and just legs up, they can do the installation.
Right.
Because that would still, you know, within Jones Act. Regulations.
Yes.
So and we want to participate in that business. So we developed the adapt barge concept. It's a 400 by 126.5 feet deck barge. Mm-hmm. It's capable of transporting more than 20,000 tons. We can outfit that with DP systems, with motion response and compensating tools. You know, active passive heave compensation tools, wave monitoring. So just, you know, to deliver a absolutely stable platform to the offshore site, and then to enable, you know, the construction of these turbine components. But it's also the same barge type can be used for rock dumping, for the deployment of subsea equipment like crane mats, mattress lay mats for cables, for instance. Okay. We can turn this into the cable lay barge. So this is something that we do, but we also started our subsea survey or subsea division. You know, we just got our good colleague Mike Arnold into the company. He's a subsea veteran with 40 years subsea experience, and so we're also like building up that segment with the provision of subsea tools and ROVs, etc.
I must say I'm very impressed. I'm just listening in awe here a little bit to most of what you were talking about. I must admit I have little or no clue. It just goes to show that shipping is a never-ending learning experience. But it seems to me that you really do have the experience that you talk about, and you are not only selling something, you actually know what you're selling. So
thanks a lot.
That of course is good. But Dominic, it sounds like you're on the right trajectory, and I think all our viewers will be very interested to hear about what you have to say. I want to say formally, first of all, happy that you're back home in Europe, where you belong, so to speak. Thanks. We need professionals like you here. And I want to say formally, thank you very much for joining this interview.
Thanks a lot for having me, Bo. Thanks a lot.
And to all my listeners, viewers, readers around the world, this was yet another great interview, in my own words, of course, with Mr. Dominic Schaefer, the MD of COG Offshore in Hamburg, looking after Europe, and also the COO of COG Offshore in the US. So thank you very much, and stay tuned for more interviews in the near future.